Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my two illustrious co-hosts, Andrew Batista and Kevin Fernandez. It's great to see you guys after a week off. Andrew, how you been?
Yeah, good, man. Good. All good. Another good week of football in this very interesting league. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, another good week. We got a couple of good scorelines to talk about because we did unfortunately miss a couple of crackers last week. But great to be back, Kevin. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, this was an interesting week. I'm doing good. There's a lot of stories going around at the moment. That's what we can say.
Absolutely. I think that's a very succinct way of putting it. And we'll do our best today to bring you all of those stories. As Kevin says, we'll talk about the games from the big three and across the rest of the table as always. But of course, we will start as we always do at the top of the league, which means once again, for the 10th week in a row, I believe, starting with Porto. And one man that's very happy about it is, of course, Andrew. Another week, another win for Porto, another solid performance. 1-0 away at Famalicão, day one, which sees them stay top of the table with the only goal from the game. But a game where I think, Andrew, it's fair to say, Porto did very well to control the game throughout, I thought.
Definitely. It was one of those games where the scoreline says 1-0, doesn't really tell the whole story. Famalicão didn't really do that much. They hit the post once, but other than that, Porto were pretty much in control throughout the game. What I will say about Famalicão's backline, they were very good at sort of loading the box and making it very difficult for our front three, for Samu, for Pepe, and for William Gomes to do anything. So they had a really difficult game, and then hence the goal coming from a midfielder, from Froholt. Froholt and Alan Varela, who both had a lot of joy in this game. They found a lot of space. They were able to deal with Gustavo Sá, who's always the main threat for Famalicão, and he had quite a poor game, Gustavo Sá, in this one. But overall, happy. Pablo Rosario came in as centre-back, and again, showing his versatility, showing his ability to be counted on and to be there when the team needs him, because obviously Benarek wasn't available. And I think him and Kivior, they had a good game at the back. You know, didn't have much to do. Dior Costa didn't have much to do. Francisco Moura, very good game from him. And he sets up the goal for Froholt. But, you know, even outside of that, setting up the goal, he was very good at finding space in those tight areas, on the line. Because, like I said, Famalicão did very well to, get the body in front of most crosses, most shots. And you could see by how frustrated Samu was when he came off the pitch that, it wasn't easy to be a forward in that game, because Famalicão was still very organized and they were making sort of life difficult for the forwards. But I think from the midfield onwards, they really struggled from a sort of attacking perspective. I didn't really ever feel like there was a threat. Another great win. Farioli will be happy that he's got through this game. He's been able to use his squad very well. We're seeing Rodrigo Moura starting games now. Gabriel Veiga coming off the bench. He looked good as well when he came on. Borja Sainz seems a bit more confident, even though he's not starting at the moment. Maybe this is how you use him for a while until he's sort of got his confidence back, but he's looking better. He's looking more assured. And I guess negatives in this game. I thought William Gomes was a bit, he wasn't that great in this game. Pepe was Pepe. He's sometimes good, sometimes bad, but if he's there, you could get something from him. But other than that, just another good, solid win against very good opposition. Famalicão at home, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a tough game for any team. And yeah, very happy with it.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing, like you say, only the one goal, but I think plenty of chances. I mean, if you watch the game back, it was, I think, you sum it up well. The Famalicão backline does very well to kind of deal with the Porto attackers, but it was a lovely goal, great build up, great move, and a great cutback for Frojo. Only the one goal, but you must be pleased with how, in that type of game where you've got a team who's really viewing the game from a defensive point of view and how to nullify you, that there's kind of these chances coming from lots of different areas of the pitch, and a start for Rodrigo Moura as well. And I think he came close to scoring as well. So positive signs to see those kind of chances coming from different areas of the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. Rodrigo Moura is one of those players, we know what he can do in an attacking sense, and he can be a difference maker. I think the important thing is that there are we're trying to get goals in different ways. It's not just one certain way, because once they figure you out, then you kind of lose that element. And I think even Samu, the kind of striker that he is, he's very good. But then you have Dennis Gul, who's a different kind of striker, does something else very good. And having that option and having him playing as well as he is as well, gives us that extra option and makes it a bit more difficult for other teams when they play against us. Because I do think there's a lot of teams that's kind of sussed Porto out a little bit. But if you've got all these different options and players that can do different things, and you can be like, oh, okay, well, guess what? No Borja Sainz. Now we're going to do it this way. Let's see what happens. Gabri Vega on the bench, and it just changes things a bit. And I think that's really important, because in this sort of long season and competitive season, certainly at the top, you need that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, that kind of spreading the chances around and building a team in that way, it spreads the pressure around as well, and it gives kind of other players in different areas of the pitch also that healthy pressure that they need to say, okay, we need, someone needs to step up today and be the difference maker. We can't just rely on Samu, we can't just rely on the strikers. Who's it going to be? And well, in this case, it was Froholt, but yeah, as we said, there were lots of players in the midfield and all around the pitch who did that. Kevin, I mean, from someone who doesn't support Porto, for someone who supports their title challenges, it's kind of watching Porto at the moment is seeing a team basically overcoming every challenge that comes their way. And I think Andrew's right to say that obviously Porto going to this game favourites, but away at Famalicão, that's a game that you would definitely put in the more difficult side of the draw in this league. There'll be a lot more easier games than this for Porto, but yeah, it was a well-controlled game with good chances and a deserved outcome, I think.
100%. I mean, I think a lot of people have made the point that Sporting have the more varied attack in the league. But I think you can say Porto is most complete just because they have the options, as Andrew has just said, and it's a very important point. And it's not only that, it's the fact that they have the most goals from set pieces out of anyone in the league, just based off their pressure, the high press, that sort of work rate from the front, where all the team contributes, where they really squeeze their opponents and manage to get opportunities from nothing, just four pieces of play from the opposition, which are forced by Porto at the end of the day. It's merit from Porto. You're not just depending on the individual talent of your players like Moura or Vega. And it's not only that as well. You've got the timing of when one is not performing, one comes in and seems to make an instant impact in the 11. When Moura was on the sidelines, he'd come in and have positive performances. Now Moura seems to be getting a few more minutes, and Vega has come in and had excellent performances in prior weeks. He's come in again and done quite well. So it looks like the timing of the dips in form from certain players are coinciding with very positive moments from others, which, and they all look more than capable to give decent contributions. And no player looks like they're worth more, at least in the attacking front. I think you could say that Porto could be quite reliant on the likes of Kirill building up play. I think he's by far Porto's best in possession for playing from the back. You could probably say Varela plays a very important role. You could probably look at stats for players like Samu and the goal contributions and whatnot. Froholt, obviously, his influence in midfield, but I don't think there's reliance on the likes of Pot or Trincão for Sporting, and that's been perhaps a little bit of a problem area, which we're going to get into. But look, I think a lot has been made of the fact that opponents are starting to figure out Porto in what they prefer to do, what makes their life a little bit more difficult. But they've played 10 out of the top 11. They are obviously the top one, so that is the one that is missing. And look, 10 wins, one draw, 25 goal, 24 goals, three conceded. What else can you really say? Porto could have easily settled the game from very early on. But apart from Karavic and some good performances from the individual defenders, and perhaps squeezing the space when Porto won in a slightly dangerous zone, if it wasn't for that, I didn't see Famalicão really doing anything to impact Porto in that much of a sense. I mean, offensively, it was quite a dire game for them. We've said across the season that it's not their strongest point. They were quite efficient, but you have the likes of Sorriso or Gil Dias having very poor performances in terms of decision making. they really couldn't connect anything to Zabiri in the only chance that he really got. He did hit the post, but it's a bit of a weird one because they did make quite a few changes to the back line, the whole squad really. Some of them were forced, some of them I think were personnel changes I didn't really agree with. The likes of Elizord, I think he's been a connection point for Famalicão throughout the season. It's a bit weird to see him on the bench for this sort of game, which is very, very dependent on how these sorts of players can really let Famalicão breathe against a team like Porto, which the pressure can be relentless. Gustavo Sá did not have his best game. Varela was on top of him every single time. Froholt came back with another one of his usual games after a little period where he was a little bit worse, if anything, for his very, very high standard. Rafa Suárez didn't play. I think Bondo actually played very, very well. And he was a player that I was very excited to see this season. Obviously, I'm a little bit more familiar than most would be from his time at Sporting Beer, but I think that transition to top division football is seamless for his level, his physicality. Technically, he's quite underrated just because he is quite built and quite imposing. Even the likes of Juju and Justin Ahaz, they weren't playing. It's a quite rotated squad, at least for what Famalicão you would think they would be hoping for coming into such a demanding game. So, look, it wasn't the best one from Famalicão. Some poor performances individually. Porto offers all sorts of issues, and as much as we want to pick some holes, because obviously they're not perfect and they aren't unbeatable, but look, they're pretty much as close as you're going to get to it at this stage. And I think the international break comes at a very good time. Bednarek's injury is not a good thing for Porto. Just regroup, get the fitness back so they can carry on playing that high intensity. Try and iron out some issues that they're having in Europe, and we'll see if they can continue it on when they come back. I think the only two other points that I have, which are quite comical, if anything, the first one is, I'm not sure if this has been mentioned too many times on the program in the past, but I really hate the camera angle at Famalicão Stadium. Can he please just have they're trying to get it renovated, like the council. I believe that's the plan. Can it be done so they can just fix the camera angle at this point? Because I get dizzy, honestly. It's just not the best. And the other one is, I'm not sure if everyone is familiar, but the referees were doing some sort of silent protest. Before this game, they were just hit by the sprinklers whilst they were walking on, which I think, yeah, let's just say it sums it up, really. Quite hilarious. I'm not going to say that I'm on their side or against them, but yeah, they got an early shower in that game, and that was quite funny.
Perhaps undermining what they were trying to do slightly. I do, and finally, love the camera angle, I believe has been mentioned. Yes, I think Barney picked up on that. It is particularly strange, but I do agree with your kind of your assessment of Famalicão. Obviously, I mean, and Andrew, I'm keen to get your opinion on this as well, because of course, you know, for a team, for a game like this, Famalicão coming as the underdogs, they understand that they have to maybe do something different to get something out of the game, or they might not be able to play in exactly the way they want. And there were players who were a bit quiet compared to what you might expect from them. And you look at the danger men in that team: Soriso, Gustavo Sá, Gil Dias. I think Kevin's right to point out they had poor games. I think I might. Slightly more on the side of that, they're coming up against a very good side. It's going to be a lot more difficult, and that's the difference between, you know, top players and players of their level, is that when they come up against a challenge, when they play against a defense or a system that's going to really challenge them, then the top players will come up with solutions to change their game slightly or manage the game differently. I think perhaps some of those better players weren't able to do that because they were solid defensively, but they weren't able to impact the game very much from the other perspective. And I know that might come across as a bit harsh, but I think you do have to kind of put that challenge to these teams. You know, this is a team that wants to be the top five or six in this league, and they should be aiming to make more of an impact than they did, other than probably the best performances, which came probably in defence.
It's also a team that we compliment a lot on the show when they do play well, when they do the right things, and in this case they didn't. They were completely outplayed in the midfield, and if you lose the battle in the midfield, it's so much harder to do anything else. So you have to look at sort of their key players. I know Gustafsson is a young player, but he's their captain. He's their sort of catalyst. He's the guy that gets all the plaudits when they are doing well. And this was a game that he really would want to forget. But it's not just him. It's not just one guy that played poorly. I thought the whole front line didn't really do anything to help. Kevin was right to point out Bondo, who had a real standout game. I think he's been pretty good all season when he has played. But this was a really good game for him. He was really up for it. I'm not sure what the idea was with the heavy rotation. I don't know if he thinks maybe the team that he fielded was more intense and they could maybe run after the ball more. I'm not sure. It's difficult to really know without him explaining it. But it definitely didn't work. And maybe he was trying to sort of catch Farioli out or something like that. But you need your players to do better. I don't think the strategies really worked. They didn't seem to even do the stuff that they do well anyway, generally. They just seem completely shell-shocked by the intensity, which, is pretty high at all times against Porto.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, not the performance they would have hoped for, but probably at the end of the day, an understandable result. And especially the way Porto are playing and the quality that they have, a very understandable outcome. To contrast kind of Porto and Sporting, the top two teams in the league at the moment, it does seem kind of like Porto are doing things in quite a controlled way in their performances. Sporting seem to be in a period of a little bit more chaos, shall we say, in some of the games that they've been having to come from behind and whatnot. That didn't change this weekend. Sporting played Santa Clara away from home, a game which they did win 2-1, but in which they had to come from behind. There was quite a lot of drama in the game, scoring the 95th minute to get the win. That was on top of a host of other drama, including red cards, controversy, etc. It wasn't easy or straightforward by any means, Kevin, but listen, maybe that's what makes it exciting. I'm sure all the sporting fans were very entertained, to say the least.
I don't want any more entertainment in that case because this was vintage Sporting in many, many ways. Get the win, but lose a few years of life expectancy at the cost of it. Wow. And this is the thing, the performance wasn't even that bad. It's just a case of same old. Especially when you're visiting a sword. I mean, that pitch was not in any state to be playing professional football. I don't want to sound like Ty from AFTV at this point, but very awful conditions for football. Doesn't help when you're trying to be a possession dominant side, when you're trying to create chances, play with some sort of precision, play in short spaces. But it is a theme that has been following through that it seems like, although Sporting can create opportunities through the middle, the left flank, the right flank, is very dependent on individual quality, how much output they each player can give, just the individual inspiration, good moments, precise play, like not completely special moments, like individualistic, like moments, like Maradona pieces of play or Messi pieces of play, but it's a lot more demanding than Porto, who they've got different routes to unlock the first goal, the first moment, and really they seem to be intimidating teams a little bit more than this Santa Clara, who were quite happy to sit back, hit on the break as they always do. Vinicius Lopes getting a goal early. That is not the first time he's done that against the Lisbon side. He likes to score against Benfica as well. Pretty sure he's got one against Porto. He's a threat. He's a very hard worker. He's that sort of utility man that every team with lesser conditions in this league would like to have in their side. And from then, it's a test for Sporting's resolve because they don't need to change a lot in their play. They just need to maybe tweak a couple of pieces in and out. If someone's having a poor performance, try and create a little bit more space, try and see if someone's on their day and actually get the ball to go in the net because plenty of chances were created. On another day, Suarez could have two, three goals, but he's just not been very efficient in front of goal. And it's strange to say this for a player with 7 goals and 11 in the league, but he's a very wasteful forward. I don't think that there's much competition for the player who's wasted more big chances in the league. I haven't seen the numbers, but I'm assuming they're not going to be very kind to him. And it's a case of really showing your winner's mentality, showing the mentality that wins two leagues in a row. Can you stay patient? Can you just find a way? And Sporting did find a way. Pedro Gonçalves was his characteristic finish at this point. We all know what he's about. He might not have the best complete games at times, but he's always involved in the final third. He's a volume player and he loves a little pass to goal. He just does what he does at this point. But it wasn't the most inspiring performances in terms individually. Fresneda, he doesn't offer much going forward in comparison to even Quaresma, who's a traditional centre back. I think Quaresma can really burst forward with more intent than Fresneda does. I think Fresneda is more limited to the overlap and his crossing is just not there, to be perfectly honest. Simões, he didn't bring as much as he has in other games just because there wasn't as much space for him to play in. He's not as good playing inside the short spaces as he is bursting into them and providing like an extra man option. I think it was the right decision to bring in Ioannidis at half time or essentially that, just to see if they could push the Santa Clara back line back further. Jenny, he had a good cross in. It was a very good cross in for the first goal, but again, not his best performance. Trincão, it's a very worrying moment for him. He's not been able to produce as much as he has previously. He had a very good start to the season. At this point, he looks like he's struggling. He gets to latter stages of games lethargic and nothing's coming off for him. Suarez, even in link up, I don't think it was his most effective game. And then we need to talk about Diarra or Diomande. What was the catalyst for Santa Clara's goal? It was basically a very poor clearance from Diomande, and from then it kind of spiraled. You could ask a question of maybe Inacio if he could have closed down space a little bit better, but essentially you can't really miss kick from a clearance where you basically play Santa Clara for a half chance, which ended up being much more than a half chance by the way that they played it. Very well taken, but yeah, a bit awkward. If anything, I'd praise maybe Inacio in possession because he was trying to force the issue. Diomande, other than that, I think he was okay. Yul Mendes was probably the best on the field. And then we get on to corner gates, which has provided a lot for us to talk about in Portugal. Another two statements from Sporting's rivals because they love to jump on. At this point, the big three love to jump on statements and Twitter and whatnot and create a little bit of drama. It was no different. Essentially, a corner was given that wasn't a corner in any way, shape, or form. I don't know how it was given, but Sporting had, I think it was 11 corners in this game. They just had to score from the 12th, and it was the corner that wasn't actually a corner. Gullmans with a good finish, and that's all she wrote. I don't think I've ever seen a corner decision given wrongly, which is usually seen as quite a minor issue, be exploded into something so significant. But hey, it turned into a goal, and it's one of those that you look back on it as a Sporting fan, and you like, because you already knew what was going to happen, and no one really likes to win in that way. You like to leave it to no doubts, especially in Portugal when everything is looked at with a microscope. And that drama really extended right to the end of the game. And even before it, Araújo's red card was a case of sacrificing himself for the team. And I think there was two or three, I can't tell you which names, but there were a couple of sending offs pretty much to the final whistle or afterwards. Like, it wasn't even 100% sure, but a nice showing of yellow cards at the end of games, which we've all gotten used to in Liga Portugal. A couple of nasty comments by the Santa Clara manager and the players that weren't very happy with the decision that did come against them, and you can completely understand. In many ways, you could probably say it's vintage Liga Portugal. Big three team get a dodgy decision for them, get the win in very unconvincing fashion in a way, and we move on to the next one. Who's it going to be next? Sporting again, Benfica, Porto. Anyone's guess.
Yeah, it's a. I mean, the events of the last sort of, well, up post 90 minutes were quite a spectacle to behold. I mean, Maxi Araujo, a man. Listen, this could be the most unpopular comment I ever make on this podcast, but a man vindicated, and boy, did he make the right choice. And I will back that decision every single time. He's prevented the team scoring. He's taken a red card, which is within the rules. And then his team go and score. I mean, what other vindication do you need for what he did? But it was a crazy. I'm sure not everyone would agree with that. That's just how I see it. I mean, if I was playing, that's what I'd do. It was a crazy ending to the game. I mean, even with the corner decision as well, it's a very tough one to kind of analyze, because I think, Kev, you quite fairly pointed out it was a basically an incorrect call to give the corner. I think where I sit on it personally is that you still have to score from the opportunity. And listen, every single team will receive calls in their favor that aren't right, be that probably not corners. I mean, corners are usually quite easy to get right, but a lot of teams will get free kicks in and around the box, throw-ins near the box that you have to, you still have to turn it into a chance and to score. So it is unfortunate, but I mean, Sporting were able to turn that into a goal-scoring opportunity. If next week or well next week in the next game week, Benfica are given a free kick near the box that they don't deserve, it's up to them to capitalize on it or not. And that's just part of football. We kind of have to accept it. But Andrew, it was a pretty crazy ending to the game. I'm interested to get your perspective on it, as obviously a fan of a rival team, but also, a fan of the league and what have you. Because, when I say that Porto are kind of overcoming these little challenges here and there, Sporting are kind of doing it in their own way as well. These games are kind of getting a little bit out of their control, but they are still finding ways to win, which in itself is part of being a top team.
Definitely. I mean, Sporting did have quite a few chances in this game. And there was a point in watching this game that I thought, as soon as they equalized, I was like, okay, well, now we'll just see them crank up the pressure and then get the goal. Even if it's not pretty, but we've seen Sporting do it this season more than once. If it works, then you just keep doing it. And I agree, there was some poor performances from some of the players you expect to get them out of these kind of issues, especially Trincão, who I thought had a really poor game. But there was also some good goalkeeping from Gabriel Batista. As usual, he's a very good goalkeeper. And there's one save from a Suarez shot. Really good save. I think might have been like the 60th minute, something like that. Insanely good save. But as for the corner stuff, I mean, I think there's definitely a conversation to be had about the standard of refereeing in Portugal. And it's a big conversation that needs to be had about some of the things that referees do, some of the decisions they make, the way VARs used, the length at which, every single check is like a 3 minute wait for like an offside or something like that. I mean, that's just absurd. So there's definitely something that needs to be done and a bigger conversation that needs to be had. Otherwise, this is going to keep happening. And anytime it goes the way of one of the big three, the other two are going to be upset. And if it doesn't go their way, like it didn't for Benfica this week, they're going to be upset, and then it's just a whole cycle. As for the actual decision from the referee, or from the linesman rather, he's right there. You can see he's right there. So I think this is maybe a symptom, and it's probably a symptom that we don't know about yet, but a symptom of VAR and the implementation of it, where I think referees maybe aren't as decisive as they used to be because there's so many sort of, oh, is it right? Is it not? Let's have VAR check, whatever, whatever. And they're not as confident as they used to be because I think even 10 years ago, I don't think that happens as much. And we're seeing this a lot more, not just in the Portuguese league, in other leagues as well. In games, there's corners that aren't being set, called as corners or vice versa. And that we didn't see that much, before. So I think there's probably a bigger issue within the game with VAR. But as for this, yeah, Quenda wins the corner. That's not a corner. But it's not like Sporting were lucky to win this game. They were lucky to get a corner, but they still had to score it. You still have to score the damn thing. And other than that, I mean, Santa Clara had a few good chances. There was a second Diomande mistake as well towards the end that sort of resulted in one big chance. And then the Maxi Araujo one was right afterwards. So they had some chances, but they weren't clinical. They weren't decisive themselves, the forwards, except for the first goal. And then they got the two red cards. You know, Sporting will look at it and say, look, it went our way. We won. We played the better football. We were more attacking. We have the better players. You know, so if you give them a free corner, they have a higher chance of scoring than if Santa Clara get a free corner or five free corners even. Do you know what I mean? Because the quality of play is just, it's just there. Humeland, you know, he scored the goal, but I don't think he did much else. I think a lot of these players will probably look at this game and say, let's forget about it. Santa Clara will continue to be upset about this for a while because, you know, this would have been a big point for them, especially at home. It wasn't to be. I think this they're going to keep talking about this for as long as possible, not just, you know, Santa Clara, but in the media and the Benfica contingent and the Porto contingent. It's just how it is in the Portuguese league.
Yeah, and it's always a difficult situation when, you know, I completely agree with you, Andrew, that just because they got the corner doesn't mean they weren't the better team on the day. But of course, Santa Clara and any fan of any other team will say that you don't win games on paper. It's all well and good to look at statistics and say, well, we can argue that we're the better team, but you do have to prove it with the goals. And, you know, so it's a very difficult one, but the fact remains that the result was what it was. And I think, yeah, I agree also that probably Santa Clara weren't didn't make enough of an impact for me to really kind of to really justify the argument that they should have got more out of the game than they did, albeit very good team, of course. We will, of course, come on to how this impacts Benfica because Benfica had a very similar situation. Is important to talk about that as well. Before we move on to that game, though, okay, I wanted to come back to something you said about maybe the over reliance of certain players. And you know, I know you already picked out Trincão as one who's not played particularly well. Pot got a goal in this game, but we've seen him be a bit hot and cold this season. Is that something you're kind of worried about creeping into? To Sporting season, and it kind of has started to already slightly.
Yeah, this is the problem. It has already started, realistically. To play alongside Hjulmand, it's not 100% certain. The front line is not 100% certain. Ioane Elija has been used a lot more, either coming on for Simões and pushing up to the front line, and maybe Pedro Gonçalves dropping back into midfield. You have Kenda or Jenny playing down the right. Even Suárez at this point, I'm not sure how certain his role is. It's not certain that Ioane Elija will come to play alongside him anymore. And at the start of the season, I think that was pretty much the only guarantee, keeping in mind Pedro Gonçalves, his situation physically. He didn't look the most healthy physically, and obviously he's now got an injury. Apparently Ioane Elija is going to spend quite a while out. Legionnaires is just coming back from injury as well, so I think that there's two major doubts at this point. One being the squad depth. I think Sporting are back to where they were before, where you take Pedro Gonçalves out of that lineup, you take Ioane Elija out of the options. Looking at the starting 11 for this game, who have you got on the bench? You've got maybe Kenda if he doesn't need to come into the team. You've got Alisson, who a few months ago he wasn't making too much of a great impression at Leiria. He had more success a little bit earlier on at his time there. So for all the praise about their squad depth, Sporting looked light again, and maybe the fact that they missed out on Yeramai, Jota Silva, quite a few targets for left wing, maybe that might come back to affect them a little bit more at this stage, where they'll have Bruges, which is a massive game in the Champions League in terms of being moderately comfortable going into the last few games of their campaign, and also Benfica, which is going to be it's still a massive game going to the Luge. The gap there between Sporting and Benfica is only 3 points. If Benfica manage to get a win, considering Sporting's record at the Luge is not the greatest, everything looks very different all of a sudden. So you've got that one, and just not even looking at depth, but just game to game, it looks like there's quite a few players that are not in the best few games of form. And that is quite concerning, just because, as I said, it looks like Porto, they have the set pieces to their advantage, and they have the massive pressure to their advantage. Whereas it looks like it's more Suárez that does that heavy pressing in the same sort of style. Sporting look a lot more reliant on a varied attack, but still very dependent on certain individual performances, someone stepping up. Suarez doesn't look like the goal scorer he was earlier on. He looks a lot more shy in front of goal. It looks like he's snatching at his chances. And it's going to be interesting to see who steps up. There are options for players to step up, but they don't look as assured as Porto do right now. And Porto are waving, they're riding a much more positive wave of form. They're on much better momentum. So perhaps the argument could be made that it's a good time for the international break for Porto. Perhaps it is a very good time for the international break for Sporting too.
Let me ask you this, Kevin. So you're talking about Luis Suarez there. I'm a big fan of Luis Suarez. I think he's a very good striker to watch. Do you think he's struggling for confidence and kind of snatching at his shots because he's probably getting less opportunities? Because there's definitely less chance creation than there was early in the season for sure. And obviously that goes hand in hand with Trincão struggling and Quenda not really being in the team, Jenny being sort of up and down, and then Pedro Gonçalves, who he's been sort of the shining light in the last few weeks, but it's still, he's a goal scorer himself, so he's looking for the goal himself as well. A lot of the times, do you think that's contributing to it? Because it seems like it must be.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. I mean, if you were going to look at the numbers for shots or saves that were forced from the Santa Clara goalkeeper, I don't think you would say that it was nearly as much as what was being forced out of Tondela and even Nacional in another game, another island game as well, that looked like it was quite shaky for Sporting at the start of the season. I don't think there was the same volume there. Neither for Suarez, neither throughout the whole team. It looks like the whole squad of players, they look a little bit more tentative in the moment to take the shot. Looks like they want to play it in a little bit more. And just on Suarez, he does look like he's snatching. He looks like he's anxious to just get the shot away, get the ball away. Looks a lot more comfortable in hold up. So it might be just a very good moment to take a few days away from the pitch, get back to the training ground, perhaps just work on it a little bit, just let things flow naturally as they were before, because everything looks a little bit more, it's just not as natural, a little bit more forced, a little bit more like we need to get the goal early, otherwise this might get very, very difficult for us.
No, it's a very interesting point, and I agree with you, Andrew, as well. I really like Luis Suarez. I think he's got a lot of the makings of a very, very good striker. Probably not the best moment of his short sporting career so far. You kind of want to see that trajectory constantly improving. Maybe he's sort of having a bit more of an up and down season as it stands, but definitely a player to keep an eye on. And I mean, Ioannidis as well, the kind of other striker who's been brought in, still kind of not quite convinced me yet either. So yeah, definitely a need for a sporting striker to step up. As I mentioned, we should of course come on to Benfica, because theirs was a game similarly kind of struck by controversy, the kind of controversy that some people really revel in. I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of these type of situations, but it is what it is. They did drop points at home to Casapia after being 2-0 up, but they let their lead slip. That controversial penalty leading to, in fairness, one of the most bizarre own goals you'll see this season, which gave Casapia the goal back. And then it was a late counter-attack, which gave the Geese, which is their nickname, I checked on Wikipedia, a valuable point at the Estadio de Luz. But yeah, like I said, a game not without controversy once again. The penalty really marred the kind of the talking points. Andrew, I'll come to you first on your kind of reflections on the game. I totally understand the frustrations. I mean, I as a neutral, I find it very hard to understand why it's a penalty. That said, if you want to kind of flip side to that argument, that only made it 2-1, and Benfica still have the opportunity to win the game 2-1, and yet they weren't able to do that. So it's not entirely down to the penalty decision the way this game ended.
This is a case of Mourinho doing what he does very well, which is taking an incident and using it to sort of distract from his team's poor performance. And I don't think Benfica were overly poor. It's not, this wasn't like their worst performance. They were pretty good, but this is your Benfica. You should be doing better against Casapia. You're at the Estádio da Luz. Yeah, okay, Kazapia, they've got a new like an interim coach, a bit of a new manager bounce, whatever you want to sort of say. But they should have done better in this game. Again, there was a lot of the same things we've already discussed since Mourinho started at Benfica. Some of the midfield issues in the midfield. Vlasoudakov had a slightly better game, even, if you ignore his goal, even, which was a very good goal, he still had a good game. He seemed like he was trying to make things happen. Pavlidis was good in this game as well. I think we also underestimate, or well, we don't, but I think a lot of people underestimate how important Otamendi is in that defense. Without him there, you could see it's two guys like in Antonio Silva and Tomás Araújo, who are two good centre backs in their own way, but two guys that don't have a lot of experience, two guys who weren't super sure of themselves. And ultimately, the goal is a Tomás Araújo own goal, a penalty from Antonio Silva. So they kind of teamed up to do this, if you want to look at it like that. So, yeah, so in terms of the actual football, I mean, Casabia were pretty good. The only thing I can really tell, I don't know much about the new manager, Gonçalo Brandão. I don't know anything about him, really. This is his first foray into being a head coach, from what I've read. He was at Sporting, so maybe Kevin knows something about him. But yeah, I think it sounds like he's quite a young coach. But what I did notice is they were trying to get more bodies in the attacking area, which I don't think Casabia were doing too much towards the end of João Pereira's time there. Other than that, I didn't see a big difference, but they did well. There was a couple chances that they should have done better with. There was a Livolan chance where it's him and Trubin, and it's the tamest shot ever. And if that goes in, I think we're talking about a different result here. Because at that point, it already looked like Benfica seemed a bit off it at that point after the first goal for sure. So now for the penalty, and all the controversy and all the think pieces that have come out since, and the Twitter storm and all the Benfica and statements and all this kind of stuff that happens after, something goes against Benfica. Yes, it shouldn't have been a penalty. 100%. That's true, because we know if it hits you in the body and then hits your arm, especially if your arm's next to you, that's never a penalty. Okay, fine. It sucks that it was given as a penalty. Why did VAR not step in? Why? I'd like to sort of know more about that. And Mourinho mentioned it in his post-match press conference that he just like to know, he'd like to hear from VAR. And that would be good. That would be a good sort of feature to have. If we can hear why something wasn't done, why something wasn't checked, that's definitely, a reasonable request. The thing is, with having Mourinho as the catalyst for what are the referees doing in this country club, the problem is he's so well known for having that sort of characteristic, and he's so hated for it because he's done it in every country, every league. He did it at Porto when he was first at Porto. That kind of takes away from the actual issues of refereeing in Portugal, because I think there's a lot, especially in the use of VAR. But I think he made some good points about the VAR maybe explaining themselves a bit better, and the VAR should have checked that. But then, the penalty was saved, so it's not like the penalty went in. Yeah, it was saved, and then it was an own goal. So it's you can't even like really complain. A very good save from Trubin, by the way. And then they score the equalizer, and then it becomes this thing about the penalty instead of it being about we weren't good enough at home against the struggling Casapia team that we're way better than. Our budget's way higher than. We've got this great team with a couple of players missing. But again, this is just Mourinho doing what Mourinho does best, and this is going to carry on. He's going to try and keep this kind of thing going so that the next refereeing decision does go their way, hopefully for him, and that's what he'll be thinking.
No, do you know what? I think that's an incredibly fair assessment of the situation. And I completely agree. Like, I totally sympathize that it was the wrong call with the penalty. I totally sympathize with that. But you're right to point out two things, which is one, they missed the penalty. And then two, they still could have won the game 2-1. Neither of those things happened. So it's not, I don't think, entirely down to the penalty, the way this game ended up. And if there's anyone who's not seen it, I would be surprised if anybody listens to this podcast who hasn't seen it. But do go and watch the way Tomás Araújo manages to pick out the top corner with like a kind of a striker's finish that I anyone
Great
would be
finish.
proud of. It was
Some finish.
incredible
Some finish.
for the own goal, which was, I mean, he was devastated and naturally so, but it was quite a bizarre situation. Do you know, I also watched Mourinho's post-match interview, and I thought also that he spoke a lot of his typical stuff. The one thing that I totally agreed on in terms of his assessment of Benfica's performance was that they played well up until they scored their first goal. And then it kind of all went downhill from there, which I thought was actually a very fair kind of assessment on how the game went, because, you know, Benfica obviously going to this game as favourites, start the game well, then do really badly to kind of... very poor game management, essentially, and you know, even the goal from Casapia, the second goal to equalise, you know, Casapia are counter-attacking with I think it was like a 5-on-4 or 4-on-3, like a man extra, and the fact that Benfica put himself in that situation is kind of quite poor. But yeah, Kevin, I'll bring it over to you and what you thought, because yeah, I'm sure you I'm sure you have some thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I just want to add to the penalty. You also want to look at Trubin's face before he goes over and, in very, very good fashion as a teammate, goes and consoles Tomás Araújo, because his reaction to the finish is like, how have you done that? Like, brilliant.
Yeah, he's looking at the goal, isn't he? He's like looking, he's like in the goal, looking at the... Yeah, yeah, I remember
he's,
that.
He's genuinely shocked. He's just like, good finish. Why? Yeah, quite a good one. And actually really unfortunate, just because I continue to think that he's a better centre back out of him and Antonio Silva, but we move. Going back to also Mourinho's post-match press conference, I think it was very interesting that he did kind of go over the players, and basically with everything that was made about the decisions over the whole weekend, because of course Antonio Silva did have to give a couple of words about what happened in Sporting's game, as if that impacts what happens with Benfica, we move. But essentially saying that for the last couple of years, Benfica have been too fragile in certain moments of the game. And I think this is perfect assessment for Mourinho, escaping all sorts of mind games and trying to get reactions out of players, and obviously all of the controversy. It's literally just what happened and kind of what we were explaining here. Casapia's goal goes in. God knows how it went in, but it went in 2-1. And Benfica, they didn't collapse completely, but they looked so fragile in certain moments. And it looks like a repeat of kind of what happened with Karabakh. Benfica were winning for the majority of the first half, and then the first goal goes in. And then it's like they're down tools. They don't know how to react. They don't know how to stay grounded. Don't know how to control the emotions of the game, get hold of the momentum again, calm things down, just continue to play their football. It looks like that is essentially the massive problem for Benfica, and obviously it does not help having the likes of Otamendi out, but you'd think the players on the pitch, players like Tomás Araújo, Enzo when he was on the pitch, Sudakov, even Alshinj being an extra midfield player, even Pavlidis to a certain extent with his ability to link up play, that they could hold the ball a little bit better, be a little bit more mindful of the moments of the game. But it looks like there is a lack of that sort of common sense almost in a way. You look at what Sporting tries to do when they have the possession plays. You think of Diomande, how he is a calm figure, usually slows down the games in the appropriate moments. Also, you could probably look at Alan Varela, the way that he controls tempo. And I think Enzo does that to an extent, but I don't see in any way, shape or form any other player really doing that. So perhaps it was a combination of Enzo being out, Otamendi being out, and obviously a very wild moment with that save and that goal. But again, Benfica don't look overly impressive in majority of the games, and it looks like there's not enough needed to make them take a step back, start committing some errors, stop playing as aggressive, and let the other team kind of grow into games, because I think Liège has been on a better patch of form so far. But it looked like from the moment that goal goes in, he kind of just he's a shell of himself. And I'm pretty sure that for the second Casapia goal, it was Nyaga who starts off the attack by really stealing the ball away from Liège. It falls back to him in the box from kind of timid save from Trubin, and that's 2-2. It's just, I think that's the biggest worry for Benfica, more than balance. And there's still some issues there. I mean, down the left flank, you don't really see anyone making any sort of headway. Perhaps Bresciani when he's on, or Dahl in the odd moment, really bombs forward, but not really getting to the byline or anything. There's also the question of where Sulukov fits best, whether you play him in the best zones, which is really in front of goal, closer to the goal, slipping through little passes, cute touches, closer to the middle, or whether it's a case of necessity where you need to have him closer to the left-hand side. There's a host of issues with Benfica at the moment, but I think Mourinho will be very, very worried about mentality. I think it's a case of, if anyone remembers that documentary that Amazon did with Tottenham, and how pretty much the first thing you see him say is that they play like wusses, they need to toughen up, they need to really go for the kill, they need to stop just playing the good football, but really have the instinct to get the 3 points ruthlessly, time and time again, stick it out in tough moments. I think it's a little bit of the same process coming on with this Benfica, and credit to Casapia, they stuck in there, they did what they need to do. It's not always that easy at these stages of the season where it doesn't look like it's going their way, and it's been tough in comparison to seasons that they've had prior. I don't remember them being in this much of a precarious position in the last few seasons, at least not past like the first 5-10 games. Usually they're in their typical 12th, 11th. It looks a lot better on them. Look, they showed a reaction when they needed to. They created some decent enough chances when they managed to burst forward. And you can't really expect much more playing at the Luge, playing against an intimidating figure like Mourinho, which I'm pretty sure everyone's still trying to get a little bit more used to at times, is just that presence on the touchline. And yeah, it's a shame that this sort of kind of result, I mean, 100 years back, you could probably see Casapia taking points from Benfica. 100 years later, it's happening again, and it's completely overshadowed by Mourinho looking like he wanted to hit the referee at the end of the game, going onto the pitch, going behind him. It looked like something from the 90s, but and it's a shame that we have to talk about the refereeing constantly. But yeah, we don't want to overshadow any good stories like Nyaga coming in, looking like a very good player. Not too long ago, he was playing for the under 19s and he's made a very good jump. And he hasn't looked all that bad when he's had his chances, bearing in mind he's got two decently reputable options ahead of him. The likes of Perez, who we know very well from his time at Boa Vista, and even Rafael Brito. Look, that's a credible story. And that's what should really stay. That performance, Skada coming in, holding down the fort, Lievelland, what he's done across the entire season, how the defence looked a little bit more balanced in comparison to previous games. That's what matters. So I completely agree with Andrew of the refereeing, not only for these two games. I mean, we're talking about Sporting and Benfica, and they made some very questionable decisions, both for Sporting or for Casapia. But we're going to get on to some other games later on. And in a week of protests, there are more questionable decisions. Yeah, let's try and grab onto the football at this point, because this was a very surprising result. And see, there are a couple of very good stories, feel-good stories on the pitch, not only off it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, a very good way to round up that game. If if Mourinho is going to bring any other aspect of his time at Spurs that we saw in that All or Nothing documentary to Benfica, I look forward to seeing Eric Dier walking through the doors very quickly. But do you know, Jez, we should move on because there was one aspect of this game that I think's kind of not been discussed quite enough, and that's Gil Vicente's role in all of this, and the fact that, in fairness, they failed to capitalize on an opportunity that Benfica presented to them, with Benfica dropping points. Gil Vicente had the opportunity to go level on points with Benfica, but they could only manage a 1-1 draw against the league's lowest ranked team, AVS. A missed penalty for Gil Vicente didn't help matters, although AVS missed a penalty of their own, in fairness. And in the end, they, like I said, missed an opportunity to go joint fourth with Benfica, joint third, excuse me, with Benfica, which would have been a fantastic achievement. Andrew, I don't know how much of this game you caught, but I think it's fair to say that the last 10% of this game probably had 90% of the drama or the action, shall we say.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was more a case of Gil Vicente kind of letting that happen. Although you have to give AVS some credit. We've been really sort of hard on them on this podcast for some of their performances, but that's 2 points in two jornadas for them now, which is they doubled their points in 2 weeks. So they're sitting on a mighty 3 points at the bottom of the table. But it's a big point for them against a very good Gil Vicente team. You know, this Gil Vicente team, I would say this season has played some of the best football in the league. You know, really good, attractive football, so sure of themselves. And in this game, I just didn't really see it that much. They struggled to move the ball around, to control the game, which you'd expect them to just control it. Credit to RVS, who were organized and made it difficult. There was obviously the penalty that was skied by Pablo, who's been so assured this season and just keeps scoring goals. And then, you know, in this game where they really need him to, that happens. But, you know, all the best players miss penalties and he'll just be thinking about the next one. But I think for RVS, even though they got a point and it's a positive, I think if 42-year-old Nene is the guy that has to win your penalty and then also take the penalty, it's like, come on, guys, we need to do something here. Overall, a missed opportunity for Gil Vicente, like you said. I was very happy when they were winning at one point, and I checked and I was like, damn, that's really good. Unlucky, it didn't work out, especially with Benfica's dropped points. I don't think it's the end of the world. They're still, you know, overperforming, and their great season continues. You just hope that this isn't the beginning of some bad run of form, or just maybe some tiredness, or something like that, because they've been so good to watch this season. And as for RVS, I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens. But I also don't think this is the big result that's going to change everything for them either. So.
No, exactly. On a different day, it could have been very different. Obviously, incredible scenes as Nene breaks his own record to become again the Premier League's oldest scoring goal scorer in history, I believe, 42 years and some number of days. And I really don't mean to sort of put him down at all, but he really looks like a 42-year-old playing football, which fair
Yeah,
play to him
he's kind
because
of
he's
hunched
still
over.
scoring.
He's hunched over. He's kind of a little bit slow, but he's scoring. Yeah,
He
exactly.
scored, yeah.
You
You
better
know, just
hope that there's no 42-year-olds watching this podcast. You better hope.
listen, I'm sure yeah, listen, Nene would put him to shame. Credit to him, he's done fantastically well. But yeah, I think it is also a fair point to point out the absurdity of the idea that in the Premier League there's a team relying on a 42-year-old to score their goals. Kevin, go on, what did you make of this one? Because I think, you know, yeah, fair enough, an important point for ABS, but I think it should have probably been three for Gil Vicente if they'd managed the game better.
Yeah, wasn't their best performance by any means. I think Joelsson was very quiet. He's shown signs of life recently, reigniting his career, having that sort of redemption arc that Félix Cuéllar had. Wasn't really his game. Pablo looked a lot like his old self, which is a little bit harsh to say this season, considering he's been so good, but that was really poor for him. If anything, the standout for Gil Vicente in this game was probably Andrew. and that was a hell of a performance. It's been a hell of a month. He got his Goalkeeper of the Month award, probably very deserved, because that is he made a number of saves which were very decent in this game, and it's been a constant. He's not been the most active goalkeeper of everyone in the league. You think of like the performances of Bernard Fonte recently, André Freire and that, but I think that's he's one of the more complete goalkeepers doing that sort of dirty work. He's not only on his line, he comes out very well. So I think that's fully deserved for him. As for Javier, I think there's been a couple of signs of life. I mean, I like what Akinsola and Spencer do down the right-hand side. I think that's something that they're going to have to hold on to if they're going to have more luck. Tomane, I think he was good in this game. I think he brings a lot more to the front line. He's not the best forward in time, or poacher, I should say, in terms of getting the goals, but in terms of ball playing, linking up plays, not the worst. Has some sort of experience. Look, we're kind of grasping at straws at this point, but it's something more than what they were showing previously. And I think it's just hilarious, the prospect that we have a team that's named after another team, but it's technically not that team that you're thinking of the TASS Cup Scotland in 2018. Goff Ruben Smeerdel, bring on Pong. And a 42-year-old forward. It's, yeah. Welcome to Portugal, everyone. It's great here.
Yeah, no, well said. And yeah, given AVS's decision to give employment to some quite despicable characters, well, one in particular, my kind of patience for being non-biased with them is growing quite thin, if it wasn't already paper thin already. Before we do some quick fire games, gents, I think we should obviously talk about Braga, who, I mean, we've kind of been down on them, we've been up on them. The one thing we've asked from them is consistency. They were unable to win last week. Of course, they lost to Porto 2-1. But this week, they did get a 2-1 win over Moreirense. I think you can consider that bouncing back decently well. As we said, Andrew, when Porto played Moreirense, this is by no means an easy game. You know, we talked about Moreirense being a good team. So very, very valuable 3 points. And I think we're starting to see that consistency again, consistency with the lineups, consistency with the formation. And it's probably starting to pay dividends on the pitch.
Certainly, and I would say I'm going to say it's deserved, even though because they were ahead for so much of the game, it did look like Moreirense were the ones doing most of the attacking, but that's because they were chasing the game. I think Braga controlled the game really well. We spoke about consistency, so they are putting out pretty much the same 11 every game. So Dorgelo started this game, but then Victor Gomes came on at halftime. Because of how good Landerson was for Moreirense, he had a really fantastic game and he was giving them a tough time all game. But some standout performances. I mean, I think the midfield was very good. Gorby's good every game. He just quietly has really consistent games and he seems to be very comfortable in that midfield. Ricard Horta, again, you know, what else can you say about him? Nyakate was good considering how difficult a game he had against Lunderson, but he did well. The only sort of question marks are maybe Grealish. I think he should be in the midfield. I think the best midfield is Gorby and Grealish, as much as I love João Moutinho. And I kind of understand why he likes Paulo Victor, but I don't like watching Paulo Victor. And every time he's on the pitch, I just feel a bit like, all right, dude, give me something else. But other than that, they're playing very well, playing very good football at the moment. Horníček is having to make a lot less crazy saves because there was a time they were really relying on him. And now he looks like a goalkeeper that's playing for one of the top teams in Portugal, which is good because he was sort of struggling for a bit. As for Moreirense, yeah, like I said, I think Landerson had a good game. Skettin wasn't really able to do much. They struggled to create like real clear-cut chances, and that's a credit to Braga's defense. André Freire, pretty good game as well. He seems to continue to have good games. It looks like he's the starter now. Carseco can go, I guess, because now André Freire is in that goalpost. So yeah, another disappointing result for Moreirense, who they'd been doing so well, and then they sort of start playing the bigger teams, and then you test them, that they're being tested at the moment, but still a good performance from them. They just weren't able to create chances, but I still think they did the things that they've been doing very well, with the midfield, with Alan Zingo. It just didn't work out really. And Braga were the better team. They deserved the win. And Carlos Vicens is getting a tune out of this team now. So sort of all that criticism that we gave him, if facts change and opinions change, and he is doing well now. He just took a while.
Yeah, listen, if they'd sacked him when I said they should have sacked him, it would have been a big mistake. So there's a reason I'm doing the podcast and not I'm not on the touchline. But I think listen, gents, let's move on to some other games from outside the league, because there's some other very interesting results. None more so, I think. No other result catches the eye more than Estoril 4, Arouca 3. Kevin, I know you watched this one. Estoril have scored 8 goals in their last 4 games. It took them a while to get going, but are they finally grinding into gear?
Yeah, something like that. Don't ask me to talk about defending in this game because I can't. None happened. But look, this is a brilliant game. Like, actually, excellent. I mean, I think it's really cut off by the last goal. Jean Carvalho and Gitan with another one of his little runs, knocks it past the player, as he usually does. And Jean Carvalho with really seamless movement. Uncontested, of course, because no one wanted to defend in this game, but slots it home to very good players for the level. Holsgrove, his involvement in this game as well, I think, and Chuada, to give credit to Arouca where it was due as well. Just these individual performances, like, this is the best that we've got outside of, you'd say, the top four or five. And these are for two teams that were struggling quite a lot nearer to the start of the season, and Arouca still do look like they are in some danger. Perhaps that is, and I don't want to say this, Albert, but it might be the candidate for the next manager to perhaps get S-worded. I'm not going to say it
Yeah, that's what
because
jinx it.
but it's not looking good for Seattle because it looks like it's the same old formula of ambitious, but perhaps don't play a mid block when you have no defenders that can actually defend space in behind. Look, this was just this too much to go for, to go through at this point. It just looked like a really good demonstration of what these teams can do when they have phases with real confidence. And there were this was a game of moments, of waves of momentum, because you could even say that Arouca looked like a completely different team after they got, I think, their second goal and their third goal. They looked magnificent at times, like really stringing some passes together. And Sunil didn't look like they had much of an answer until they got the ball again, went forward, scored against a defence that had very little to say. I mean, if it wasn't for Bomber getting his goal, I'd give a negative score for all of the defenders, because even he contributed to a quite a comical moment for one of Arouca's goals. Look, I'm trying my best to be positive here because it was such a good showing of football if you just look at the offensive side, because both of these teams, they can play football. And when they got it going, and there were so many phases in this game where it was end to end, quite fluid stuff, free flowing stuff, like actually ambitious football going on. It was a joy to watch. Not so much on the replays, because then you realise, like, what is this defender doing? Toes down the space. Don't be so passive. It was very passive defending. Just some great shows of individual talent. I'm not going to stop going on about them. Carvalho, Holsgrove, always the same. Begraoui, he looks like he's breathing a lease of life into this shrill attack, coming alive at the right moment. I think Lamine Adsir does make a difference in that Estoril team as well. I think that's the right balance in midfield. What both of them can bring very differently, but complement each other in the midfield, very important. Arouca, I think they had their best midfield together. I think that's Lee, Foucault and Simel. There's something lacking in that attack. I don't think Barbero is it at all. He looks very isolated in many moments of the game. and that defense is not built for this, neither is Studios. But hey, if they can make another few games like that for us this season, I'll be their biggest supporters.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think it was actually two very, quite similar teams to watch come up against each other. You know, as you say, Kevin, young, ambitious managers trying to get the best out of promising sides. But I think, you know, the difference really was in the quality on the pitch. I mean, when you look at Estoril, you look at, like you said, those players that you pointed out, Gitan, Carvalho, Begrau, who had a great game. I don't see players like that in the Arouca squad. You know, players of that, they were just you know, they just had that kind of level above, which I don't think Arouca had, which was obviously unfortunate for Arouca, but made for a fantastic game. Probably would have been the best game this season to watch live in the stadium, I think, when you're not worrying about, you know, analysing too much, you're just enjoying the chaos. That would have been yeah, it would have been a great one to see. Andrew, on a slightly different end of the scale in terms of, you know, score line, but still quite an interesting result, was Tondela, who we spoke about the last time we recorded, probably at the most length we had done this season, and their struggles. They did lose at home to Vitória. Vitória, again, a team having their own issues. It was, you know, it's unfortunate because we can sit here and say it could have been very different. Tondela made a lot of chances. You know, maybe if they'd scored one or two earlier on, it could have been a different result, but it wasn't. They ended 1-0, and of course, as I'll let you elaborate on, it did lead to a managerial departure with Ivo Vieira leaving. So, you know, listen, this is the reality of football. We can sit here and say, oh, you know, they did their best, they tried to create chances, but it's a results business, and too many results have not gone their way.
And this has been the story of the season for Tondela. They play well, they create some good chances, they're not clinical, they lose. We kind of look at them and say, oh, that maybe they were a bit unlucky in that game, or they could have got more. In this game, they were better than Vitória, you know, which these days isn't that difficult, but still, you're playing against a team that are they have a better squad. You know, Vitória, we've criticized the squad and selling of players, but they still have a way better squad than Tondela, and Tondela made them work for this win. You know, it's a bit unlucky with the penalty right at the end. That would feel like a punch to the, you know, to the teeth, for Ivo Vieira, for the whole team, because they put a lot into this game. I think some of the issues really with Tondela is, you know, even Cavaleiro is your striker. This is a guy who his decision making's never been great. He's a guy who, you shouldn't be leading the line. He's a good player, and he was a good player for them to get. I think it kind of works for what they're trying to do. But he had some big chances in this game that he squandered, and he should have done better with. As for Vitória, I mean, it's a big win for them. Considering they're playing against a
They needed
relegation
it.
team, they needed this win badly. And I don't think they look very good. Arcanjo starting, I think that's important, because they're a team that creates so few chances that you need someone like him that can kind of do something and make something happen, because there isn't a real great sort of, there's some patterns of play, but you can see that the personnel is kind of limited in that sense. And so they don't create chances that consistently. And in this one, they barely created any. Luis Pinto will be so happy, obviously, with the result, and he's under some pressure, I think, as well. You know, a couple more losses, who knows what could happen. But you know, it's kind of sucks for Ivo Vieira, who I think he did the best he could with this limited team. You know, they've got some good players, this Tondela squad. I look at Yaya Sitola in the midfield. I think Cicero is another good midfielder, so they do have some good players. I'll be interested to see who comes in next. I think we'll see Ivo Vieira again soon, probably, hopefully anyway. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things where the team with the better players and the bigger budget ended up winning, even though they probably didn't deserve it.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the one player from Tondela I was quite keen to, I was quite, well, maybe not go as far as impressed by, but I was interested to watch, was Hugo Felix. I mean, obviously, with the name comes reputation, and it was interesting to see how he played. And I thought he looked like a very promising young player playing in an important senior game. By that I mean clearly talent there, but very difficult for a player, like a young player like that, to be the kind of difference maker, if that makes sense, or to take that pressure on their shoulders, which I think he clearly has the talent. A player like that could be very valuable with a team like this, but wasn't able to kind of create that killer chance or take any chances of his own, which was, no real criticism to a young player. But again, it's, when you look at Tondela and what they need, like you say, Cavallero, not quite perfect. Players like Felix, not quite perfect. It's hard to rely on these players and expect different results, even if you do kind of get them playing decently well on paper, as Ibra Vieira did. But sadly won't be continuing as the head coach after the results. Let's quickly touch on a couple more games, because there were other games that were interesting to see, or which kind of made an impact on the table somewhat. Kevin, Alverca drew with Rio Ave 1-1. In what I saw is actually quite a well-matched game, which I think is a credit to Alverca as the newly promoted team. Beautiful header from Clayton, beautiful goal from Clayton, which we expect from him. But Alverca did well to stay in the game and get a point.
Yeah, I would argue that Alverca was actually the better team for the majority of the first and the second half, if anything. I think it was another showing of how limited this Rio Ave team really can be. I mean, you had a couple of standout performances, and it's not going to shock anyone when I say the first name or the first two names, André Luiz, Clayton, the only ones that make anything happen going forward, really. I think Bravek was actually quite good at the heart of the defence. He was really commanding. And then it's very, very meh. I think that's the best word I can use to describe it. It's just meh. And I think it's Alverca who were weakened, if anything, by circumstances. I mean, if it wasn't some very sloppy losses of possession at times, I don't think Juve would have much inspiration at quite a few moments of the game. I think they looked a lot more comfortable, obviously playing at home. And there's a number of players that are unavailable at the moment. Figueiredo, who I've come on here and praised quite a bit since he's come into the team. Obviously, Chiquinho, who looked to really be carrying the team for through the first couple of games, roughest probably period that they've had since they've come back up. Another couple I'm sure I'm missing that were probably more involved in the first stage of the season. And at this point, we're trying to. I'm pretty sure Stadio is still trying to figure out whose best 11 is. He's not had all the a million players, apparently, that he has available at every opportunity. And you can kind of gather at this point the level of some of them. André Gomes, she's a very talented goalkeeper, but I'm not too sure whether he can deal with this level of pressure and just this level in general. The step from the second division to the first division looks a little much for him at this moment, especially being at Benfica B, where he would have risen through the academy, being a very different type of goalkeeper, being on the winning side, not doing that much in terms of saving shots, and now he's called upon very, very often. I think Niapu, and I've butchered the name, but that's the best you're getting out of me. He looks very error prone in possession, very sloppy. It's just night and day between him and Kaiki, who he's looked incredible. Navzic, that again, I've said it the first time I mentioned him on here. I don't know how he's not at Palmeiras actually making a name for himself. He deserves a lot better than, with all due respect, a newly promoted side in Portugal. I am not a fan at all of Abdoulaye, and this could be controversial because he's gotten a lot of praise for his ball-winning abilities, but can you please stop giving the ball away in possession? It looks like there's half a team that is more suited to a lower block, to lesser ambition, and then you have the other half of the team, the players like Lincoln, like Amri, like even Wazi to an extent, just looks like they just look like on they're on another level, like another wave of thinking, another level of ambition and execution at the end of the day. And I think to have a little bit more success going forward, I think they need to switch up this forward. He looked, Milovanovic, I think I'm right in saying he looked like he had some redeeming qualities earlier on in the season, hard worker, but he just looks like he goes mid. He looks like he's involved, but he's not really doing much. When the ball gets to him, it just looks like a weak point. And when you have evident quality around him and not even mentioning, as they always seem to have, the likes of Sandro Lima, Gonçalo Esteves on the bench. I think there is potential for a little bit more. I think we're stuck saying the same thing with Alverca. Oh, it's getting better. They've got potential for more. What could they do in four, five, six games? If they get a couple of players back with a little bit more time, perhaps we could see their best 11 going forward. And if they already do look a little bit better than Tijuana, they'll definitely look like they are, or they'll cement that for 100% later in the season. In terms of Tijuana, I don't know where they go from here. We've said this time and time again. Looks like they're capped at this sort of level. Perhaps they'll get a nice 14th place finish, but it seems insufficient for what they've shown previously. It's disappointing. We want more from Hiwav. Like,
Yeah.
they've shown that they can do more as a club, as a project. And I don't know. It's a shame to see that it takes a club coming up, signing a bucket load of players, and they look instantly more attractive than a club that was a staple, if anything, a couple of years ago. Hopefully they survive and they get back to their ways, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be very uninspiring and on the limits, despite being an 11th at the moment. The gap is not that big.
No, that's very, very true. And with Elverk, I think we've had kind of good things to say about them at times, and sometimes, you know, clearly they have weaknesses. I think it is, you know, it's fair for a team like them who've been promoted and have all these new players that there will be teething issues. I think it probably is a net positive at the moment, and will continue to be so throughout the season. I think if they stay up, next season will probably be a, you know, a better place to judge them when they've had another season to like refresh the team. And I do agree, Kev, that Alverca were a better team. But that said, if Riorav could defend set pieces, they'd probably win the game. If they could defend a ball into their own box, which I thought they were really poor at multiple times, for some reason seemed to be a real weakness for them. I think I'm right in saying it's where the goal came from. They probably could have won the
Yeah,
game. But
I think at this point, these teams need to watch the Premier League more often because it's night and day in terms of how much importance they put on it. I was actually
it's true.
looking earlier on. I think there's like 3 goals on average per team for set pieces. In the Premier League, it's 4. And this is subjective. It's like it's an extra goal. And if you look at how they defend them as well, it's not like brilliant routines from the majority of teams. You could probably praise Porto for that, but not too many others. In the Premier League, it looks like every team is trying something. It looks neglected in Portugal. I think it's time to get with the times as well.
Surely someone like Ian Cathro's got a set piece coach up his sleeve somewhere. Someone like that must do. Before we go then, Andrew, one more game, because Estrela played Nacional. Quite, you know, for people like ourselves, and I'm sure some listeners of the podcast, this is the type of game that we look out for. Two kind of interesting teams that we like the look of. Quite an entertaining draw. It ended 1-1. I'm not sure if either team will be happy for the result. It feels like that type of draw where perhaps both teams would come out of it thinking they possibly could have won the game. Estrella probably had the better of the chances, but nonetheless, it was a good spectacle for the neutral.
It was a good game. I mean, Nacional were good for 40 minutes and then they scored their goal and they kind of just disappeared. It was very disappointing from Nacional, who, you know, you there's no easy points against Nacional. You know, no team gets to just get points against Nacional, and in this one it seems like they gave the game to Estrela in a way. I thought they were really poor in the second half. Credit to Estrela, they kept trying things, they were making subs, and Sidney Cabral with another very good game, and obviously there's the penalty and then he has to retake it and there's all of that sort of drama. There's a shot right at the end from Jovan Cabral that hits the post, and that would have been not just the goal of the week, that would have probably been one of the goals of the season. Incredible 40-yard shot. He started on the bench, and you know he's been on the bench more recently, but overall Estrela were very good in the second half, and I would say on the balance of the way they were playing, they probably should have won, and they'll be disappointed. They'll be more disappointed than Nacional, who were the away team, and I think they, if they look at themselves, they'll say, you know what, we should have done better. We know we're better. We're more organized usually, but then they just kind of let things go. Thiago Magalhães will be very disappointed because he's got quite high standards and he asks for a lot from his players. But an entertaining draw, especially for a neutral. Another positive result for Estrela, who needed it, and Nacional, two teams that are doing better than most people would have thought. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, most pleasing thing from my perspective is that this is a game not taking place between two teams in the relegation zone, which is, for both of these teams, teams that, I have a soft spot for, I think, do a lot right, and I'm sure most people would be very happy to
Shows
see.
you the level. That shows you the level, though, of the
It's true.
Portuguese league in terms of these kind of teams. A few years ago, we'd be looking at them in the relegation zone, and that's just not happening.
No, I think that's a very good point. A point we'll end on, not to leave it on a negative, but a very good point. We'll leave it there for this week. Another fantastic week of Premier League of football. We head into another international break, but we'll be back on the other side of that to bring you all the action from upcoming Premier League of fixtures. A big thank you, of course, as always, to my two co-hosts, Andrew and Kevin. You can find links to all their work in the description of this podcast if you want to check out what they're up to. And of course, a big thank you to yourself for listening. If you've enjoyed the show, you could consider checking us out on Patreon. There is a link to that in the description of this podcast, which you can sign up to for £1 a month. But I think we'll leave it there. Just leave me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.